Okay, I want to invite you to turn now to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, and we're going to be focusing in on verse 6 this morning. But I guess as we go through this, we will read from the beginning of chapter 5, from verse 1, the beginning of the Beatitudes up to and through the one that we will be discussing each morning. So we'll be reading Matthew chapter 5, verses 1 to 6 this morning, and it's on page 1501 in most of your pew Bibles. Matthew 5, beginning at verse 1. Now when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. All right, so as we've mentioned in previous weeks, this is the beginning. This is the introduction to Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, perhaps his most famous discourse in the Gospel of Matthew. And in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus tells us what it means or what it looks like to live as Christians in the world, fallen though it is, where God has placed us. And so here, Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount gives us our marching orders. And one thing that we noticed in previous weeks, one thing that I sometimes think is kind of interesting, is that Jesus doesn't begin with methods or techniques. He doesn't begin with the laws or commands that you absolutely must observe as you go about this life and as you go about the work that he's given you. No, he begins internally. He begins with our character, which is precisely what the Beatitudes describe. And we also said that the Beatitudes collectively answer kind of a fundamental human question, and that question is, what does it mean to be truly blessed? I mean, after all, whether you're a believer or an unbeliever, everybody wants to be blessed. Everybody wants to live a life of fulfillment. Everybody wants to be happy and satisfied, right? And I don't mean superficially happy, and I don't mean temporarily happy. I mean to be blessed in the most comprehensive and the deepest sense of that word. And Jesus, in the Beatitudes, shows us how. And what he teaches is actually quite surprising in some ways. And you have to understand, it was no less surprising to his original audience as well. Ultimately, Jesus says, true blessedness, true happiness has nothing to do with what the world thinks it does. It doesn't have to do with success. It doesn't have to do with beauty. It doesn't have to do with influence or wealth or power. Ultimately, it's as simple as this. Your blessedness, your happiness depends on whether or not you enjoy a relationship with God, a right relationship with God. And enjoying a right relationship with God requires first that we face up to the reality of our situation. This points us back to the first three Beatitudes. So then, blessed are those who are poor in spirit, or those who understand the desperation of their position, who understand their deepest need. Blessed are those who mourn on account of the sin that persists in their lives and in this world, lamenting that things are not always the way they ought to be. Blessed are those who are meek, or willing in gentleness and humility to abdicate their rights for the sake of other people. See, in every one of these Beatitudes, there is this inherent irony. Jesus gives a description in each one of these of something that we weren't expecting. I mean, according to the world, according to perhaps even our feelings, how could it be a blessing to be brokenhearted and humbled? How could it be a blessing to mourn? How could it be a blessing to abdicate our rights? I mean, our rights are something that we stand on in this country, isn't it? How could that be blessed? And yet, Jesus tells us again and again that this posture, this attitude, this character trait is precisely what it means and what it requires to be blessed. And this morning we come to the fourth beatitude. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. And this one, I think, in a significant way, is kind of the key to all of the other Beatitudes. It presents to us, at the very least, a beautifully concise statement of the gospel. But let me explain what I mean. See, together, the first three Beatitudes kind of express the depth of our need for God's grace. They reveal to us the bad news that we need to hear and accept and own and understand before we are actually prepared to hear the good news and to truly understand the magnitude of the good news that God has given us. Poverty of spirit, grieving the sin that persists in our lives and the world, being meek and humble. No one can ever be a true follower of Christ without first allowing themselves, at least to some degree, to be the kind of person described in the first three Beatitudes. And that leads us directly to the fourth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. This is kind of the great affirmation that the first three Beatitudes were building up to. If you are the kind of person described in those first three Beatitudes, then you will realize that the one thing that would make things better, the one thing that you need more than anything else, the one thing that you absolutely do not have in and of yourself but want above anything else is righteousness. It is a thing, in fact, that you will, if you are a believer in Jesus Christ, desire from the very depths of your being. Yes, believers long for righteousness, and we are called to a life of seeking after it. Now, before we bring this into a modern context, let's talk about Jesus' original context. Now, Jesus was originally speaking to people who knew what it was like to have righteousness or justice denied to them, okay? They knew only a life under oppression from the Roman Empire. They were a people who, at least in some sense, I would argue a limited sense, they longed for the righteousness of God to be reestablished in their land. And of course, Jesus was well aware of their situation and also their perspective. But I would argue that he is concerned with a much more expansive view of righteousness than the Jews were looking at on a day-to-day basis. The blessing of righteousness that Jesus speaks of went far beyond the righteousness that could be attained on a national or a governmental or political level. The righteousness that Jesus held up for his original audience and the righteousness that he holds up for us is a comprehensive righteousness. And it begins and is absolutely dependent upon a right relationship with God, which then transforms, for the better, our relationships with one another, and which also overflows in our relationship to all of creation. That's what I mean by a comprehensive righteousness. And so when you look at it that way, when you think about it that way, you can see that the fourth beatitude really, what it's describing in an ultimate sense is a longing for heaven, where we are destined to be one day, our eternal home. And it's also, because Jesus teaches it here in the Beatitudes, a desire to receive that gift and live into it even now. It's not something he tells us and we think to ourselves, oh yeah, great. Well, that'll be nice when that happens. No, he gives it to us as a encouragement to live in light of that even here and now. And you know, it is to become a desire for us that is even greater than the one that we feel for food or for water or for air, because those desires are only concerned with the needs of our bodies. The desire for righteousness concerns the deepest, most profound need of our souls. It is, to put it in more modern terms, a desire for spiritual fulfillment. And as I said, it begins and is completely dependent on a relationship with the God who created us. It's an expression of what St. Augustine felt when he prayed his famous prayer, and I'm going to read it in the old language. Thou hast made us for thyself, O God, and the heart of man is restless until he finds rest in thee. Isn't that beautiful? This is the longing. This is the longing that is described in the fourth beatitude, which means I should point out early on that those who receive this blessing sense that they lack something that they need, okay? After all, why would you desire something that you already had? I know that's kind of obvious, but we have to understand that first. We have to understand that there is something that we do not have in and of ourselves, but that we absolutely need. You need to be able to confront and admit you have a problem before you can start looking for solutions. And so Jesus, in essence, is saying, blessed are those who realize that they lack righteousness and yet long for it. The implication, pay attention, is that this blessing cannot be experienced by those who consider themselves self-sufficient or already happy or already satisfied. Our spiritual welfare and well-being, our biblical health and wealth depends on the recognition of our need, and that only God can provide for the satisfaction of that need, which is righteousness. Well, what exactly is righteousness? Well, we could accurately say that righteousness is conformity to God's law. That would be a simple definition. Perfect conformity to God's will, perfect conformity to God's character as we model ourselves after him. Righteousness is to be, in a sense, like God, to be morally aligned with him. To call what is right, right. To call what is wrong, wrong. To actively pursue what is right over what is wrong. But another aspect of righteousness is recognizing when things are or are not as they ought to be. Recognizing when things are as they were intended to be by God. And when that happens, in those glimpses that God gives us in our lives, we can say that at least in a temporal sense, a state of righteousness has been achieved. The Greek word is diakosuna, and it's one of the most important words, I would argue, in all of the New Testament. It's the word that is often translated justice or justification, or in this case, righteousness, okay? It's the concept that serves as the great theme to many of Paul's letters, especially in the book of Romans, where he explains how a man or woman of faith is justified before God. And there are three main aspects to this concept of righteousness that Paul talks about in his letters, that Jesus is talking about here in the Beatitudes. And I believe that Jesus intends to cover all of them in this Beatitude. And the first is this: it's what we might call the legal aspect of righteousness. Its focus is on an act of God's grace, the divine declaration of a guilty sinner to be righteous or justified in his sight. And of course, that's what the great biblical doctrine of justification by faith is all about. God's declaration that a sinner who believes in Jesus Christ is now righteous. Now, the second aspect is what we might call the moral aspect of righteousness. And its focus is not so much on our status, it is a focus on the way that we live or the way that we are to live. Righteousness as a pattern of life lived in conformity to God's expressed will. You could maybe describe it as the practical expression of the legal righteousness that we have been given as a gift, a free will gift by God. And so it is living in response to this gracious gift of righteousness that we have received. So, first, getting back to the Beatitude, we are to hunger and thirst for the legal aspect of righteousness. Second, we should hunger and thirst for moral righteousness in our lives, in our daily living. Third, and this is the one I have to be most careful with, the third aspect is what we might call the social aspect of righteousness. And I believe that this aspect of righteousness, as we understand it in a comprehensive way, should come third, okay? Because it cannot be true righteousness unless the other two, legal and moral, are in place. Social righteousness has its focus on other people. That is, upon loving our neighbors as we love ourselves, that is about doing unto others as we would have done to us. It would include the desire for the liberation of oppressed people, no matter what that oppression is, the promotion of civil rights, the pursuit of good justice in our laws and statutes, a compassion for those who are in need and those who are oppressed. It would include integrity in our business practices, and so on. It is what God calls us to through the ministry of the Old Testament prophets. For example, this verse that probably all of you know, at least the gems do, from Micah 6, verse 8. He has showed you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? To act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. So without question, a genuine follower, a genuine disciple of Jesus Christ will look upon the injustice in this sinful world and desire righteousness for all. But let me just stress again so that nobody attacks me after the service. Social righteousness must be an outflow of the others. After all, it would be hypocritical to hunger and thirst for social righteousness without having a greater desire for justification through Christ that leads to righteousness in our own lives first. Blessing comes through longing for this comprehensive righteousness. Blessing comes when we chase after it or do our best to live it out with all our being as a thing that we cannot live without. Blessing comes through seeing this righteousness as what God made us for, but who have not yet experienced it in full because of sin, because of evil in this world. A closer look at the fourth beatitude reveals that it has two parts, and this is going to be kind of a duh, okay? All the beatitudes have two parts when you come down to it. But I want to just mention that the first part affirms the thing that is desired, which, as we said, is comprehensive righteousness. But here's the interesting thing. It actually points back to the first three Beatitudes because that highlights, summarizes, in a sense, the depth of our need and what our true need truly is. It sums up the thing that we lack before God and that thing that nevertheless we desperately need, which is righteousness. And the second part of the fourth beatitude promises to us the complete satisfaction of that need. That those who are brought to this intense state of desire or longing, of hungering and thirsting after righteousness, will be satisfied. This is a promise of God. And you know something? Just as the first part of this beatitude points us to the first three beatitudes, the second part points us to the last four. And those last four are descriptions of the kind of person who has been brought into a state of righteousness by God, and those who are enabled by the power of the Spirit to live a completely new life founded upon the power of God. And such a person now has the capacity to be merciful. Such a person has the capacity now, through God's strength, to be pure in heart. Such a person can now be a peacemaker in this world. And such a person, notice this one especially, will often be persecuted for the sake of righteousness. And so that said, can you see how crucial this fourth beatitude is? It's the one that kind of stands as a bridge between the two sets of beatitudes. The first three beatitudes show us the need for God's grace. The last four show us a life lived in response to that grace. And joining the two sets together is this one beatitude that shows us how we are granted that gift of righteousness, that gift of grace that we so desperately need. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. And that, brothers and sisters, is the most remarkable promise that any poverty-stricken, broken-hearted, meek, and humble sinner could ever hear. They shall be filled. Yes, that is the promise. That is the reward to those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Using a different phrase, it would be complete satisfaction. If you desire righteousness that you cannot live without, but that you also cannot attain on your own, Jesus promises that through him you will be filled, you will be satisfied. And be real clear on this, because that Greek word for filled, that is in a passive voice, which means that the reference to the filling of those who desire righteousness, that is something that is accomplished not by them, but by another, by something outside of themselves. And so it is a satisfaction that we can't earn. It's a satisfaction that we absolutely do not deserve. It can only be received as a free gift from the very author of righteousness. How hopeless would it be if it were up to us to satisfy our own desire for righteousness? After all, we're the ones that got ourselves into this predicament of unrighteousness in the first place. Brothers and sisters, praise God that he himself has done what was necessary to satisfy this desire in his people. And how does this satisfaction of our hunger and thirst, this fullness of righteousness as a gift of God's free and unmerited grace come to be ours? Through Jesus. Only those who have embraced Jesus by faith, know what it means to be satisfied in this life, and only they will know what it means to be satisfied in the next life as well. Jesus himself says in John 6, verse 35, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will never go hungry, and he who believes in me will never be thirsty. May we truly desire righteousness. May we truly desire Jesus Christ, through whom we receive righteousness. And being filled by Christ himself, may we desire it more and more. This is the pathway to true blessedness. Amen. Let's bow our heads in prayer.